You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome along to the latest edition of the Football Writers Association podcast here with William Hill. Good to have you with us. Dave Kellner here in the studio. And joining me on the line right now is Martin Hardy, the author of Touching Distance, a football writer. And it's a warm welcome, first of all, to you, Martin. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Nice to speak. How are you doing? You okay?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well indeed. You obviously cover football in the northeast, Martin, so you've had a busy week, haven't you?
Yes, just a little bit. Even by northeast standards, the race for failure this week took an Olympian level. And Newcastle just nudged it by falling out of the Premier League for the second time in 7 years ahead of Sunderland, who secured their ninth successive season in the top division. But a bit fraught. The complete different feel of emotions. Newcastle's fans devastated on Wednesday night. And Sunderland fans partying, one of them who I know till 3:45 a.m. on Thursday morning. Yeah. Just covers the story, I think.
It's a good time to be a Macam, isn't it? Not only do you secure your Premier League status for another season, you get to relegate your arch rivals in the same evening. I'm surprised it wasn't out later.
He started at 12 o'clock on the Thursday, so I think it was just a couple of hours recovery. There was one former Sunderland player, and I won't say who it was, walked through the press room at the Stadium of Light after the game had finished. And he said, it's not really about us staying up and celebrating. It's more about them going down. So, and I think that just about covers it. Sunderland are used to staying up in the last two or three games of the season, having done it for the previous 3 years. You know, they needed something else to kind of make it more novel. And that was obviously relegating Newcastle. And, you know, Sunderland now and Sam Allardyce seem to have an opportunity to build a team rather than one that can only just about survive each year. And Newcastle have gone to lick their wounds and see where they come back and how they come back.
As far as the final day of the Premier League season on Sunday is concerned, we've got pretty much everything sorted apart from the fourth place finish. Leicester City, obviously, Premier League champions. We've got the three relegated teams as well now, with Norwich, Newcastle and Aston Villa all going down. Newcastle at home to Tottenham on the final day of the season. Newcastle are 7-2 to win this game. The draw 12-5, and Tottenham in the betting at 5-6. Martin, you mentioned that those Newcastle fans are obviously disconsolate in the lead up to this game. I suppose the one remaining question is whether Rafa Benitez is going to oversee a possible championship challenge next season. What's the word on Tyneside about that?
I think there is a chance, which is more than I think people thought about a week ago. And I think that it may alter the mood in the stadium on Sunday, which may affect those having a bet. I think if you'd said on Wednesday night, Rafa Benitez is definitely leaving the club, then you would have had a really strange and eerie atmosphere at St James Park on Sunday, because I think a lot of fans with tickets might not have even bothered going. Those there probably would have vented their spleen against Mike Ashley, the owner, and also Lee Charmy, the managing director. Instead of that, you may have an element which will be the pro-Rafa Benitez side of the support, which is absolutely huge, and you may find them presenting a vocal argument towards Rafa Benitez to stay at the club. There is a chance he's going to stay. As I said, I think it's a lot greater than people thought a week ago. You may find the Newcastle fans get up for him and inadvertently therefore for the team. That may make it a harder afternoon for Tottenham than you'd originally thought. The draw might not be a bad bet at 12-5, as you said. That therefore, barring some kind of goal avalanche at the Emirates, would mean that Tottenham would grab a hold of second place and finish above Arsenal.
Yeah, thinking about the draw there at 12-5, then you mentioned an avalanche of goals at the Emirates. We could have that, not to the extent that it would take Arsenal above Spurs if Spurs managed to grab a point at St James's Park. But Arsenal 1-7 to win their game at the Emirates. The draw 13-2, and Aston Villa in the betting at 18-1. Could be worse for Newcastle fans. They could be supporting Aston Villa.
Well, yeah, but I was at Villa Park last Saturday, and it possibly was the wrong time to play Aston Villa, because it could be the final Premier League game for a year or two, because they are in a bit of disarray. But what Eric Black did was he played three central defenders, he had his two fullbacks very deep, and he played Sanchez in front of them. So he had effectively six defenders, and Newcastle couldn't break that down. Arsenal, for all the pretty football, and I saw them recently at the Stadium of Light, have lacked that penetration that would have had them challenging for the title. You'd go with Arsenal, but keep an eye on that one, because Villa did not fight hard. Maybe it was the unique element of playing at Villa Park, and for once, the Aston Villa fans got behind them. But they were difficult to break down. It might not necessarily be the goal avalanche, as I've just said there, that some people are predicting. But you'd still take Arsenal to win it, I think. But if you had a spare pound, I don't think you'd put a spare pound on 18-1. But 13-2, have a little look at that one, perhaps.
If you like Arsenal to win and under 2.5 goals, perhaps, if you think it's going to be tighter than the bookmakers envisage, that's 16-5 Arsenal to win the game and under 2.5 goals. But given the assessment of those two games, you'd expect Spurs to just maybe edge their North London rivals, and it would be a terrific achievement for Spurs, because they haven't finished ahead of Arsenal in the Premier League since 1995. And yep. Given Mauricio Pochettino signed that new deal that takes him up to 2021 as Tottenham Hotspur manager, there's reason for them to go into next season with lots of enthusiasm.
Oh, without a doubt. They've fallen slightly going into the home straight. But you look at players like Dele Alli, Dembele, Harry Kane. These are players that are just going to get better and better. And as long as Tottenham, make that fight to hold on to them, which they certainly will for the next 12 months, then you see Tottenham progressing and moving forward. It's still, football's still a very strange game, though, because Arsenal could win on Sunday, and Tottenham could lose at Newcastle, and Arsenal would finish above Tottenham, and Arsenal have been harangued by supporters who don't go to the games anymore. A lot of them want Arsene Wenger out of the club. Pochettino's the rising star of English football. He has all these brilliant players, and yet Arsenal could actually finish above them. I don't think they will, but there's not a great deal between them. What you suspect, which perhaps you're alluding to in your question, is that it appears Tottenham's trajectory is pointing upwards at the minute, in which case that would indicate a shift in the powers, the footballing powers in North London.
Do you sympathise with Arsene Wenger then, Martin?
Well, yeah, I do, and I've criticised him sometimes in the past. I look at that. I'm a bit of a football purist, so I like the way he plays the game. Sometimes they overcomplicate it. You just think, go and spend £60 or £70 million, which they will have on a centre, a proper world-class centre forward. Not Olivier Giroud or playing Theo Walcott down the middle. Take that gamble and perhaps go to PSG and say to Ibrahimovic, give us the belief that Eric Cantona gave to Manchester United all those years ago. Give us the swagger and the strut. Bring out the best in all these really quick, intelligent midfielders that we have. And, give Wenger six. I know it's hard. He's been there for over 20 seasons. Say in 6 months' time, Arsenal, have us at the top of the Premier League. Because what Leicester have proved this season is it's not that hard to win the Premier League. I don't mean to be disrespectful. And you expect Tottenham will be a bit stronger. Man City have to do better. Man United have to do better. And Liverpool and Chelsea will both come. But there's still a bit of a vacuum in terms of there's not a brilliant team in the Premier League at the minute. Mm. That you go back to the Man United team that had Cantona and Cole and Keane and Butt and Giggs and the Nevilles, and you think they would have won this division. They probably would have won the division 2 months ago. The same with the Chelsea team under Mourinho and his pomp. So that there might be this. If Arsenal were going to win the title, if you were a betting man, you would say this is the year they should really have done it, when there wasn't a big strong rival amongst the big financial powers in the games. There might still be a little bit of a window for them to have to go next year. The big problem is once you lose support inside of a football club, it's very, very difficult to get it back.
As well as a centre forward, Martin, maybe just a bit of steel in central midfield as well, because Wenger's put his trust in quite small, from a physical standpoint, small, intricate players that have a lot of guile. But when a game needs to be grabbed by the scruff of the neck, as it so often does in the Premier League, he hasn't got that real stalwart there.
Oh, no, no. You look at the feelings of that Arsenal team, and it's a regular argument that they could do with a little bit more bite and aggression in the heart of the midfield. Somebody that protects the two central defenders a bit better. Funnily enough, Sam Allardyce, one of Arsene Wenger's long-term foes, went to Bayern Munich and bought a reserve called Jan Kirchhoff for £750,000. A 6'5" player who everybody thought was a centre-half, but he had played that holding role before, and he's been absolutely brilliant. And you think, that's just the kind of player Arsenal could leave in there. Never was far from his central defenders, sniffed out all danger, but was actually very good on the ball as well, which is obviously a prerequisite for an Arsenal Wenger player. You think, if he could unearth somebody like that, as you said, but for me, more importantly, a proper world-class centre-forward, they're not a million miles away, and as I said, they could yet finish above Tottenham, who have had a great season. So make sense of that.
Let's talk about the two Manchester clubs, because the top four finish still to be sorted out. That fourth place up for grabs. Manchester City in the driver's seat, and they travel to Swansea on Sunday. Swansea 9-2 to win this game, Martin. The draw 100-30 with Manchester City 8-15. Enhanced odds here: Andre Ayew to score and Swansea to win 9-1. Sergio Aguero to score and Manchester City to win in the betting at 11-8. Manchester City have tried their damnedest to throw this fourth place away throughout the final month, Martin, but they're still there. They're still in fourth now. And if they can get a result, any sort of result at Swansea, be it a point or all three, they will get fourth, and it's the least Pep Guardiola would expect going into a new club.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they did their best and succeeded to throw away the title, which on paper you think they really should have given Leicester a far bigger fight for it than they have. Now they've tried to throw away fourth place. I think that and that odds you've given there of an Aguero goal and a Man City win at 11-8 should tell you that the bookmakers see this as a game Man City will not lose. And that is the most important thing. As long as Man City don't lose, unless Man United win about 19-0 against Bournemouth, then it's Man City's fourth place. I think Man City have enough to go to a Swansea who are 11th, you know, who have one foot in the swimming pool in Dubai or Marbella or wherever else they will go. Enough for Man City to get a point and therefore make Man United's home game against Bournemouth largely irrelevant. And you will look through a myriad of reasons why a team hasn't come forth, and there are loads of different factors, but you look at Man United and you think they played West Ham away and they had that game not in the bag, but a 2-1 up, you thought they fought back. That comeback from West Ham has probably done Man United. If they were sitting there on 65 or 66 points now, you'd say they're going to do this, they've come from nowhere to sneak it, but I think they're probably going to finish fifth.
Manchester United are 2-5 to win that game against Bournemouth, who are 7-1. The draw in the betting at 7-2. What's your gut feeling then? Do you think both Manchester clubs win this weekend?
I think Man United definitely win. I think Man City definitely don't lose.
Okay.
I wouldn't say they definitely win. They're just so erratic. But if you were to push me, I'd say I think Man City will win. I'm fairly certain Man United will win. But Bournemouth are now reflecting on how great a season they've had, but they're actually fallen. They're falling down. They could finish the season 1 point above Sunderland, who have spent the entire season fighting for their lives, and that tells you where they're heading at the minute. I think it's a Man United win, and I think it's a Man City avoiding defeat.
Yeah, the good thing about Manchester City is they have arguably the best striker in the Premier League in that team, in Sergio Aguero, who's got 10 in his last 10 Premier League games, and is still looking to be a Premier League top scorer despite missing a chunk of the season as well. So he's got by far the best goals per minute ratio in the Premier League this season, and he is a standout player, isn't he?
Before everybody talks about the Premier League, and it is competitive and it is exciting, and you know, we've gone to the final 2 weeks and teams at the bottom are still fighting for their lives, and they're playing against some mid-table teams that are having the decency to fight back. The one world-class player, and I think there is only one, who plays in England is Sergio Aguero. I think Kevin De Bruyne at one point will rise to that level of talent where you're talking about an Ibrahimovic or a Ronaldo or a Messi or a Neymar. Aguero is the one player that is in that category. I think he's an absolutely phenomenal footballer. As you said, he's missed a large chunk of the season and he's still sitting there on 24 goals, 2 assists, 10 in 10. And you're thinking, whatever Man City's feelings are, they are not at his door. He's an absolutely phenomenal footballer. When you consider he's not the biggest, the press box at Newcastle is fairly close to the dugout. He's phenomenally stocky. He has these huge legs, which means he's hard to knock off the ball. There's not a team, I don't think there's a team in the world would not want him in their team. I think he's brilliant. If he was to nudge out Harry Kane or Jamie Vardy in the final day of the season, nobody would begrudge him that, I don't think.
Premier League top goal scorer odds here with William Hill. Harry Kane on 25 is 4-9. Sergio Aguero on 24 is 5-2. Jamie Vardy on 24 in the betting at 6-1. Jamie Vardy, obviously, the more difficult task this weekend with Leicester City travelling to Stamford Bridge to take on Chelsea. And I keep on waiting for this adrenaline to stop pumping in this Leicester City side. And they keep on performing, don't they? Even when they'd won the title last week in front of their home fans at the King Power produced against Everton, it's going to be... You think the hangover's going to kick in at some point. I wonder if it's going to be this week at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. They're waiting for a hangover, but they just keep drinking through it. no, yes, I know John Terry's not playing, but I think this may be a day that'll be difficult for them to get a lot of goals. That's my perception. Did you say Aguero's 5-2 to finish top goal scorer?
Yeah, he is, yes.
I could see him easily getting a hat-trick at Swansea.
Yeah, I could as well, actually.
And I think if Rafa Benitez is... But as I said previously, is tempting the Newcastle fans into an atmosphere by potentially staying. And you've got a back four at Newcastle that Benitez has put together of Bernanita, Jamal Lascelles, Mbemba and Dummett, who have conceded, I think off the top of my head, 3 goals in the last 5 games, haven't conceded a goal in the last 2 games. My money, I'd be putting a couple of quid on Sergio Aguero, keep coming top scorer. Harry Kane might get one, but I think Aguero could get 2 or 3. They might actually finish level.
Jamal Lascelles has impressed me, by the way, Martin. Sorry to butt in there.
Yeah, no. He's done great. What's really good is that he was a young player that came into the team at 22, but didn't march into the team. Kind of came on as a sub in a few games, and he's been put in there because Colaccini got injured on the club captain of Newcastle United, Fabrizio Colaccini. Injured his calf in a warm down on a trip to La Manga for mid-season break and hasn't played since. So you can summarise Newcastle United in those kind of moments. Lascelles, to give him his dues, has been very vocal in the dressing room, even though he was young and relatively inexperienced. He challenged all the bigger names in the dressing room and said, what you're doing is not good enough. He's worked his socks off and the Newcastle fans like this player, and he could well be the captain of a championship team next year. He's done that well. He's done absolutely brilliant. You can't speak highly enough of him.
Martin, thank you for your company on this podcast. Pleasure speaking to you. Obviously, we're all gearing up for the Euros as well now.
Yep.
Which should be good, because you mentioned Dele Alli and Harry Kane in that preview when we were talking about the Spurs game. I'm just hoping that Roy Hodgson pushes the boat out a little bit in this Euro Championships and we get to see a little bit of a difference in an England side and maybe not the old guard having their names on the team sheet despite their performances. I'm hoping he's going to blood some of the younger players.
Yeah, well, I agree completely, and I think he has done that so far. You've seen a new, less well-trumpeted group of English players coming through who are exciting, you know, players you've mentioned there, and you can throw a Walcott in there maybe and a few other players as well beside there. Who could potentially have a good tournament. But it's interesting, we were speaking to Sam Allardyce yesterday, and I was asking him about his England ambitions, and he kind of said, you know, and he said, oh, Roy's doing a good job. And the perception is that Roy's doing a good job, but Roy and England had a disastrous World Cup. And if England fail in the European Championships, you think, well, where will England decide? Roy Hodgson hasn't fitted the mandate of developing young players, which he has, but make them tournament players. So yeah. It's an interesting situation. I think there is actually a lot more pressure on him than I think people have perhaps realised. If he can deflect it off the players, I think they might not have a bad tournament. But it's very hit and miss. It's not an England full of Gerrard and Rooney. You know, the real players that were knocking at one stage in their career on being the very best in the world. These are players that are lower down in their development. You hope their energy and their pace and perhaps a little bit of a different style, not to mention the fact that it's in Europe rather than the heat of South America might suit England, but England, you know, England's recent records in tournaments is not great, so we will watch that one with great interest.
We will indeed. If you want to follow Martin on Twitter, at mhardysport, do check out Martin's book as well, Touching Distance, which is, it's about the Newcastle United season in 95-96, is it, Martin?
It is indeed. It gives the context of that season as well, which kind of starts when, briefly, when Kevin Keegan comes in 1982, when the club are a second division team, and he creates a relationship with the supporters, which people perhaps outside the region didn't understand. He then comes back when they are at the bottom of the second division, and within 4 years, they are having this titanic struggle with Manchester United for the title. It was kind of a reminder to a few people that Newcastle are a big club and have a recent history of being at the top of the table rather than plummeting at the bottom. But also to capture that period where Newcastle were known as the entertainers and were a team that everybody around the country enjoyed watching because they had a unique style of football. They you know, a lot of people have subsequently said after I've written the book, you know, if Newcastle were on a Monday, and these are Arsenal fans and Tottenham fans, if Newcastle were on the TV on a Monday or a Sunday, it was a game that you would watch and you would hope that they won. So it's to reflect a unique, probably a unique team in the context of the Premier League, but certainly a unique team in Newcastle's history. You know, Newcastle haven't won the title since 1927, and that season they established a 12-point lead but didn't see it over the line. So it's one for the romantic as well. You know, kind of some Newcastle fans approached me and said, can I read this? Because is it going to upset me and bring back some bad memories that I've kind of locked away? And I said, it's cathartic because it works through just it. What I wanted to bring back to life was the magic of that period where Newcastle had 4,000 fans watching them train and you couldn't get in the stadium. And obviously it provides a fairly sharp contrast to life at the minute. Mm-hmm. But it's been received great by people outside the region as well, which has been wonderful. So a lot of work to write, but you know, a real labour of love. And The reception it's got has justified it all, which has been great.
Fantastic. I look forward to reading that. I loved Kevin Keegan when he was manager of Newcastle and briefly manager of England as well. And as you mentioned, it says in the Kevin Keegan, the entertainers, and Newcastle's impossible dream, and they really were entertainers in the days of Keegan. So I'm looking forward to reading that, Martin. Thank you for your company. That's on good. This podcast.
No problem at all. Been a pleasure.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.